Chapter 61. Michael hurried through the gate and knelt before the mailbox, his knees sinking into the wet mud. There it was, nestled at the base of the enamel pipe, a black stem rising from the earth. The soil at its base was raised but compact, no doubt bearing Clerkenwell's handprints. The plant's main stem was split as the detective had promised. Part was embedded in the ground, the other half clung to the mailbox like a crawling vine.
"Michael, what are you doing out here?" cried Taylor. "Where have you been? We were worried about you."
She hurried out from the house and thrust an umbrella over Michael's head, shielding him from the cold drizzle. Not that there was much point. He was already soaked through.
"There it is,"
he said in disbelief.
"Pops, you really ought to come inside."
"It's so beautiful."
He gazed at its translucent leaves. Bursts of spectral color shot across them with each raindrop's landing. The flashes caught Taylor's eye, bringing her down to Michael's level.
"What in the name of..."
"It's to protect us from someone who owed us," said Michael.
"Protect us how? It's a freaky weed."
Michael shook his head, smiling, then thrust his bare hands into the soil, gently teasing up the bundled roots. As he lifted it, the plant drooped. Michael froze. Cautiously, he peeled its secondary stem away from the enamel. It came away like tape from a parcel, leaving behind a faint residue. As the last strands came away, the plant fell limp across the ball of earth in Michael's dripping hands.
"I need a bowl! And a plate! Hurry!"
Taylor dithered, unsure how to keep Michael dry while fulfilling his request. She tucked the umbrella under his armpit, then scurried into the house.
"Thank you, Taylor,"
he said upon her swift return. He decanted the fragile plant, then covered it over. Abandoning the umbrella, he rose to his feet, clutching the precious cargo, and shuffled towards the street.
"Where are you going now?" called Taylor.
"Damien's house. There's something I need from his daughter,"
said Michael.
"Do you even know where that is?"
"He gave me his address at the party. Don't wait up for me. I'll be back late."
Rolling her eyes in despair, Taylor hurried after him with the muddied umbrella.
"Get into my car, Pops. I'll give you a ride. Besides, they won't be at home. Hope has her weekly physio at this time. They'll be at the outreach center. Let's go."
Michael sidled through the bustling lobby. The center was teeming with excited families checking in for appointments and socializing in the cafe despite the late hour. The sound of team sports rang out from the main hall. Michael approached the front desk and dripped over the counter.
"Hope Hadley,"
he demanded. The clerk looked at him blankly.
You...
"I'm her grandfather, and this is urgent."
The clerk's eyes glanced sideways, betraying the girl's location.
"She's in treatment right now, sir. I'm afraid you'll have to..."
Ignoring the clerk's protests, Michael brushed past the counter and shuffled towards the treatment rooms. Taylor apologized profusely while the clerk called for help.
"Sir, come back! Security!"
Michael fumbled with the pull door, struggling to operate it while clutching the precious bowl. A buzzer sounded, and a ministry automaton glided in from the sports hall. It sped across the lobby and seized him.
"Put me down! This is urgent!"
cried Michael.
"Taylor, do something!"
Taylor half pleaded with the clerk, but with limited conviction. It seemed she shared the other woman's reservations.
"Look, look!"
hissed Michael. He coaxed the lid off the bowl and showed the automaton the plant inside. The machine shuddered and released its grip on Michael. Its neck twitched like it was short-circuiting as it stared at the glistening clear leaves and their hypnotic bursts of color. Squeezing past the machine, Michael nestled the bowl in his arm stump and pulled the door open, then rushed into the corridor beyond.
"Sir, you can't go through there!"
The clerk's voice faded behind the closing door, while Michael stumbled through the treatment suite, peering into the rooms as he went. There she was. A therapy automaton was tending to Hope. Its head snapped up in alarm as Michael burst into the room. The machine rose to its full height, about to accost him, but he revealed the glistening flower, causing it to seize up mid-stride. With the machine rooted to the spot, he hurried to his granddaughter's side.
Grandpa! Michael! What's going on?
Fluid tubes and electrical monitors connected Hope to a battery of instruments at the side of the room. Her frail body was suspended from the ceiling in a harness. It held her upright while a vast mechanical hamster wheel rotated beneath her legs, allowing them to move passively.
I'm here to help,
panted Michael. He set the muddy bowl down on the counter and stared around the room. He hadn't really thought the next bit through, such was his hurry.
Is this about my birthday meal tomorrow?
Winced Hope.
I wanted you to come, but Dad said no. I could ask him again, though.
Michael ignored her, rifling through the drawers of the therapy room, searching for a syringe, or, failing that, something sharp enough to pierce skin. His hand landed on a bungee cord. The metal hook was just sharp enough. He sterilized it with alcohol rub, then approached his granddaughter. She eyed him up warily as he shuffled closer, clutching the bungee with a vial poking out of his pocket.
Grandpa, what's with the cord?
I only need a small sample. Just stay still and try to relax,
he grunted.
Sample of what? Hey, what are you?
He swiped the hook at her leg, missing by a fraction of an inch, as the spinning wheel carried them back and forth.
Hey!
Hope jerked her hips, trying to dodge Michael's swipes. Her good arm was on the opposite side, constricted by the harness, with no way to fend him off. The jolting only made her gait unsteady, causing her feet to trip and drag against the ridges of the wheel. With her legs fixed, Michael seized his opportunity and raised the metal hook, preparing to stab it directly into her thigh. Damien burst into the room, with Olive and Taylor in tow.
Dad, stop! He cried.
Damien lunged forward, seizing Michael's hand, catching the hook just inches above Hope's skin.
What the hell are you doing? Hope, are you okay?
She nodded tearfully while the others quickly shut off the spinning wheel. Olive and Taylor lowered Hope from her harness into her chair. Taylor quietly soothed the young woman while Olive checked the machine readings for anomalies. Damien pinned Michael against the wall, quivering with anger.
Dad, you better explain fast or I'm calling the police, snarled Damien.
I'm helping her,
wheezed Michael.
By trying to stab her with a bungee? Are you insane?
Yes, he is. And I am calling the police, snapped Olive.
Don't do that, I beg you, urged Michael. It's for her 18th.
That is the most messed up thing you've ever said Olive, disgusted.
I only need a few drops of blood, that's all it takes.
Blood for what? Yelled Damien.
The flowers. Taylor saw it, she knows. She understands. There's a plant in that bowl, which can protect as many people as it has buds in bloom. You all saw what it does to the automatons. You can't deny it's special.
You're telling us this is some kind of magic plant?
Scowled Olive, peering into the bowl.
It's not magic, it's official. It's part of the ministry's way. I'm a steward now, you see. I got it from the detective, Olive. You know who I'm talking about. The redhead who took Thomas' body away.
What rubbish, spat Olive. Even if it was from that hateful woman, there's no way it does what you think. It's a flower, for crying out loud, Dad.
And yet, stranger things happen in your place of work each day,
countered Michael. Olive blinked, taken aback.
You think I don't know about the wooden statue?
Pressed Michael.
The waters, the clays. You may find it hard to believe, daughter, but there was a time your mother and I were like two souls wrapped in one. She told me things, prized secrets of the ministry.
You know about Grandma's work?
Said Hope brightly.
I've never heard this stuff.
Can you tell me about it?
Alas, I wish I knew more. Life pulled us apart, dear one, said Michael.
No, Dad, you drove our family apart, which is very different, snapped Olive.
I'm still trying to fathom on what planet it would be acceptable to stab a child and expect it to protect them, snarled Damien.
Ours, shrugged Michael. It's the world we live in. You can fight it, as I did for so many years, or you can accept it and make the system work for you, as I am trying, for all of us.
By cutting my daughter?
Barely. Like I said, I only need a handful of drops to confirm the soil, after which the stem can be separated. Then it protects both our households. Olive, if I can protect the method, I'm confident that I can extend it to your household, too. It's transactional, see? I'm speaking the Ministry's language now.
I don't want anything to do with your insane meddling, Dad, fumed Olive. Give me one good reason why I shouldn't report you right now.
Because Hope's life depends on it, said Michael simply.
You really are full of it. They should never have let you out, you old psycho, fumed Olive.
I'm begging you, let me do this, for Hope's sake. You can report me after, but please, just let me confirm the soil, cried Michael.
Olive stormed over to the phone and snatched up the receiver, raising her finger to dial.
Wait!
Cried Hope. All eyes fell on the teenage girl, who shifted in her wheelchair nervously.
I should get a say in this, right?
You're a child, said Damien softly.
Only for another 2 hours. Then I'm an adult. I'm like all the rest of you. Unless I experience some seismic shift between now and then, I think it's fair to say my opinion should carry as much weight now as it will from tomorrow.
Damien groaned, despairing. Okay, sweetie, have your say.
Grandpa Michael, I want you to take my blood.
Sharp intakes of breath sounded from each corner of the room.
You do?
You do?
Cried Olive, Damien, and Taylor aghast.
You're not thinking clearly. It must be the stress of it all, began Damien.
I am, Dad. And this is my choice. My body, my choice.
Well, yes, technically, but...
And I choose to give a sample of blood to Grandpa Michael for his ritual.
Michael's heart thumped with excitement.
Yes, yes, Hope. Excellent decision.
Aunt Olive, please, can you draw the sample safely? Said Hope.
Olive looked from the girl to Michael to Damien until the girl's father nodded in defeat. Cursing, she unlocked the secure cupboard and withdrew a syringe. Placing it against Hope's thigh, she drained a small vial of blood, which she unscrewed and placed in the girl's hand.
Thank you for believing me,
said Michael, extending his hand.
I don't believe what you've been told, Grandpa, but I believe you need this to feel calm. I hope it brings you that,
said Hope. She placed the vial in his hand.
You won't regret this,
beamed Michael. The clock on the wall struck 10 p.m. Michael slipped the warm vial into his pocket and grabbed the plant off the counter.
I have to get this done by midnight. Taylor, I need to borrow your car.
What? No way. I can give you a lift, but I'm not...
Please. This is something I have to do alone. I swear, do this for me and I will never ask you for anything again,
implored Michael.
Hell, if those are the terms, you can have my car,
snorted Olive, slamming her keys on the counter.
Thank you, daughter. I know I never got a chance to thank you enough for all you did for our family. But your mother would be so proud.
Thanks, Dad. Coming from you, that means very little,
said Olive flatly. Michael stowed her keys with the vial and hurried away from his baffled family. He was about to go to the one place he could never take them. Michael rammed the car through the cemetery gates, shattering the rusty chain around them. He sped through the park, illuminating rows of headstones and sculptures as he twisted and turned through the winding estate. He screeched to a halt midway up a track as his subconscious memory nagged at him. Leaving the lights trained ahead for illumination, he continued on foot through the rows of graves until he reached the stone he was looking for. Even with the lot number seared in his memory, he did a double take upon finding it. Decades had passed since he last came here, and in that time, the seasons had smoothed over the boy's sculpture, robbing his features of detail, erasing his vivid smile, and obscuring his withered arm. The headstone had fared no better, with lichen rendering the inscriptions barely legible. Michael's eyes landed on the plots either side of the boy's grave. His mother and father had since passed, too. Or at least, the two people who believed themselves to be his parents, and who had dutifully tended to him for his short life. Michael knelt before the boy's grave and dug a small hole with his bare hand. Unwrapping his overcoat, which had functioned as makeshift padding for the bowl, he tipped the wilted plant into the cavity. It was looking even more wilted than when he'd excavated it earlier. He covered the main bundle of roots with soil, pressing the two sets of earth together with his fingers. Carefully, he lifted the secondary black root from the ground and placed it against his son's headstone. But the feeble tendril slid down the dry stone, struggling to gain traction. Michael plucked the vial of Hope's blood from his pocket. Unscrewing it with his teeth, he tipped it out, dousing plant and stone alike in crimson. The plant quivered, as if shivering. The tendril straightened out, strengthening its grip on the stone. The main plant perked up, glistening in the car's headlights. Michael reached into his other pocket and grabbed Olive's car keys, flicking open the penknife. Without a moment's hesitation, he slashed the thin blade across his thigh. Hot blood seeped into his trousers. Dropping the knife, he prized the fabric apart to expose the wound. Squeezing the cut, he showered the soil with his blood, nourishing the main bundle of roots. Panting, he slumped against the headstone and watched the plant eagerly. He'd followed Clerkenwell's instructions to the letter. Assuming the plant took, both households would be saved. If that worked, Michael would return with more blood, coming each day to protect a further household of his sprawling family. As soon as they saw that Hope was okay, they would understand. They would all give him the small droplets he needed to protect them forever. The plant reached its apex, standing taller than ever, its leaves no longer wilted at all. Michael stared at his work and cried with triumph, marveling at the beautiful, shimmering flowers. As his eyes moved to the secondary stem, his mouth fell. Something was wrong. It was moving downwards.
"No,"
begged Michael. But it was too late. The stem slid limply to the ground, leaving a streak of red against the weathered stone.
"Stop it! I beg you!"
he cried as the malady spread across the rest of the plant. Its strength was failing, and its stems drooping. As the plant wilted in the car's headlights, Michael realized the bursts of color were gone from the petals. Their transparency was fading too, being replaced by an ashy blackness. He placed a desperate finger against a withering flower head, but it came away immediately. The once shimmering petals fell to the ground, blackening and curling into a crisp. One by one, the plant's flowers withered and died. Michael watched in horror as his family's only chance of survival collapsed before him. In despair, he wrenched the entire plant from the ground and thrust it back in the bowl. He had to get it back to safety, to the mailbox. Clerkenwell had said something about nutrients from the enamel. Maybe they could save it now. He raced across town, screeching to a halt at a crossroads. Glancing at the wilted, decimated plant beside him, a sickening feeling clawed at his stomach. The plant could only survive in one home, meaning he could only protect one family. The turning to the left led to Taylor's home, her husband and kids, and of course Michael's abode. He still had 50 years of real life to make up for. And like Clerkenwell had said, the ministry didn't hang around with ex-offender's letters. His eyes darted right, to the route leading to Damien's family and their daughter, Hope. Beyond them, Leon's family, and Sophia and Nina's. His head was swimming. He had to pick one. With a cry, Michael hit the gas. Michael staggered out of the car. Grabbing the bowl, he fell before the mailbox and clawed the earth away. He thrust the ailing plant into the soil and covered it over, watching with bated breath. "No more blood, no more transplants," he whispered, placing the secondary stem against the enamel pipe. The plant shuddered once more, its leaves perked, but only fractionally. It was hunched over, a weakened echo of itself. Curled black petals fell to the ground as Michael tenderly compacted the soil around its base.
"Hang in there. Don't die on me, please," he whispered,
now patting the soil feverishly. Tears streamed from his cheeks as one by one the remaining flowers succumbed to the black death consuming the plant, shedding their petals and crumpling before him. As he sobbed, a single glistening bud caught his eye. There, nestling between the two stems, was a tiny transparent flower, clinging on defiantly. Color streaked across it as Michael shifted position, marveling at the lone survivor, not daring to touch it. A light flicked on upstairs. Damien's silhouette loomed against the curtains. Michael scarpered back to the car, speeding away before his intervention was known. The family's best chance of survival rested on that plant staying hidden, discreetly clinging to the foot of their mailbox. Michael weaved through the neighborhood, then pulled up by Olive's place. Cutting the engine, he stuffed the keys under her doormat, then withdrew quietly. The rain had subsided to a delicate falling mist. As the library tower chimed midnight, Michael set off for Taylor's house by foot. Dawn glinted through the top of the guest room curtains. Rising from his sleepless bed, Michael headed downstairs. Within half an hour, the kitchen was filled with the most glorious smell of fresh pancakes. He stowed them in the warm oven, ready for the others, then watched the clock chime 6 a.m. Raiding the hallway key rack, he stepped into the crisp morning air and approached the mailbox.
"Don't worry, old friend. I come in peace," he croaked, patting the top.
Michael reached inside, retrieving a solitary brown envelope. He smiled, recognizing the messy scribble across its front. 18-year-old Michael had never been one for handwriting.
"Do I smell pancakes?" cheered Taylor from the hallway.
Following the cold draft, she adjusted course to find Michael in the garden.
"Oh God, has the mail come? We are expecting an invoice from Robbie's piano teacher, and I'm pretty sure he's hiking his rates," she began.
Taylor's eyes landed on the brown envelope, and her face fell.
"Who's..."
Her voice trailed off nervously as she edged closer.
"Relax. It's mine,"
smiled Michael.
"What? But we only just got you back. This is so unfair. I need to wake the others," she cried.
"Please don't, Taylor. Truly. I'd rather go without a fuss. Tell the others I love them. I may not have always expressed it in the best of ways, but I hope they know."
"You're going right now? Are you sure?" stammered Taylor.
"I'm done running,"
he smiled.
"My time has come.